Welcome to another episode of the Monday Mile Podcast. Today, I'm linking up with a gentleman who has just completed the award-winning hit TV show, The Traitors. First of all, I can confirm he is not a traitor, but a faithful and the triumphant joint winner of the game show. It's Jake Brown.
Nice to meet you.
Jake, welcome to the Monday Mile.
I'm delighted to be here. The whole past month has been a roller coaster of emotions, and I've loved every minute of it. I've really enjoyed the whole journey, and I'm just so grateful to kind of be here, really.
You won over £94,000 split.
Yeah.
Joint with Leanne.
Yeah.
I bet that was a good feeling, receiving that in the bank account.
Very good feeling. Leanne actually texted me to say, check your bank.
And no
I was
way.
Like, I looked at a, I've never seen that amount of money before, like all at one time. It was just an amazing, it almost doesn't feel real. It still feels like I'm waiting to wake up from a dream. It's slowly sinking in, but it's taking its time to kind of really register what I've just done. Like, I've been on one of the biggest shows in the UK and I've won the show, and now everyone knows who I am, and I've got all this kind of like attention and fuss around me, and I'm trying to really like soak it up and take it all in.
Does it feel a bit like you've won the lottery?
Yeah, it does. It feels like I've hit a jackpot, and now I'm really just riding that wave and seeing what opportunities come my way in the future.
The jackpot is large.
Yeah, the jackpot is jackpotting. It is very big.
What was it like being within the show? Because as a viewer, the intensity of it seems savage.
Yeah, like what you see on TV is literally, it's like probably times 100. Like being there in real life, it's so intense, and everyone's kind of like wearing the hat on the sleeve and really fighting for, like, it's like a survival game. Like you're fighting for your life, like to life or death. And it is really intense, and that took me by surprise. I remember sitting down on that first round table and Claudia was doing a circle and like a shark, and she's picking the traitors. And I remember thinking, oh my God, what have I got myself in for here? It was so scary, but yeah, I loved it.
And what was it like having that time with Claude's? Now, I'm a bit of a fan of Claude's.
She's amazing.
She's top class.
Yeah, meeting her, like, first time I met her, she knew my name, she knew everything about me. And not just me, like the whole cast, like, she knew everyone's name. She's like, massively obsessed with the show as well. So she's like the biggest fan. And she just felt like a normal person. Like, it didn't feel like I was speaking to a celebrity. She's very, very calm, very funny, very like loving and supporting. So yeah, she was amazing. And she makes a show. Without Claudia, Traitors is not Traitors. That makes sense. So yeah, definitely.
Is it surreal now? The show's come out.
Yeah.
And you have been quite literally catapulted into the limelight. Is that a bit of a shock?
It's a bit of a shock because I didn't actually realise how many people would watch the show. I knew last year was quite popular, but this year, it's gone through the roof. The viewing figure is like 10 million people watching an episode. It's like one in six people in the UK know who I am. And yeah, like, even my kids, I can't believe how many like kids are watching it. I've got like messages saying an 8-year-old son was watching it and he loves you. And I'm like, I didn't realize it was that variety of ages that watch it. But it just shows how good the show is. And I'm so happy to be a part of it.
Going into it, did you have an intention?
Going into it, my whole like game plan, whole strategy was around, I have to be a traitor because I'm just too opinionated. I'm too loud, I'm too vocal. And I thought I would not survive as a faithful. So my whole game plan was I need control so I can try and save myself basically. And when obviously when Claudia picked and it wasn't me, panic mode set in. And I just thought, you know what? I'm still gonna play the game like as if I'm a traitor. So I was vocal, I was loud, I was opinionated, and I just went for it. I mean, it helps finding Linda out on day one. But
that moment, take me to it, because that's become like TV comedy gold. Does it get any more obvious?
I think it probably made it more obvious on TV because obviously they actually like zone in on it and they zoom in and what have you. I couldn't believe my luck. My first thought was, this is so easy. Like, I can't believe it. It's like straight in front of me. But then it was so frustrating because people didn't really believe me at first. They're like, oh, that's something or nothing. But I was like, you know, it is something. Trying to convince the rest of the players, it was just really hard work. But to which it opened my eyes, because you've been blinded with the blindfolds on for so long, and I look up and I just it did seem so obvious to me. And then she even nodded afterwards as well. But yeah, I love Linda. She's amazing. Best acting performance.
She's definitely going to get some sort of TV commercial off the back of it. When it comes to that moment, the final, you're standing there. You throw the bags on the fire. Were you confident in each decision you made when it came to slowly getting rid of people?
Not at all.
No?
No, so like, the least confident I've been in the whole show. I felt like I had a lot of trust in Mina during the game. I think I said in one of the episodes, like, I trusted the most, one of the most anyway. And when she stood up there and said she was a traitor, I was like, and now I can't trust anyone. She was one of my person I trusted the most, and now she said she's a traitor. I got to, like, rethink everything. So the last few episodes, I was, like, in next-level paranoia, and I was trying to, like, double-think everything that I'd thought through. So going into that last endgame, I wasn't really sure in Alexander from the get-go, really. He had a lot of unfortunate cards. I just really could trust him.
I could see that. I would feel the same way.
And the main reason was, he's a diplomat. He spoke very well, but at the round table, he seemed to get his words mumbled up, and I thought, as a diplomat, I just expected him not to do that. I thought he'd be a better speaker on the round table when the pressure's on. So that kind of fooled me. And then he was in a death match. He got lowered down from the cages. I kind of expected one of them to be a traitor. And he just was very unfortunate. And then with Frankie, I knew she was trying to get rid of me because that last day, she just wouldn't speak to me. She was pulling me around for secret chats. And I thought, I just knew. And I thought, it's going to be me or Frankie. I knew that's how it's going to go. The power of which we fell to Leanne. And I was just praying. When Frankie stood there and said, mother to mother, I was like, that's it.
Oh,
I am done. I've got no chance.
The crazy thing is, at that point, it is so, so close as to who walked away with the prize purse. When you're standing there, in that final moment with Leanne, you're kind of toying with her.
Yeah, yeah.
How did you find that confidence to sort of play that role?
Well, I just thought it's a very stressful environment, and I could tell as soon as I seen Leanne's reaction to me and Frankie pleading our case that Leanne was a faithful. I knew in that moment the tears were going down her face. She was shaking, and I thought, right, she's a faithful. If she votes for Frankie and it's me and her left, I know I've won. So I kind of like had a little bit of time to kind of compose herself.
Yeah.
And I just thought it'd be quite funny just to kind of spice up a little bit and just kind of keep on her toes. Because she kept me on my toes because she was choosing between me and Frankie.
Yeah.
I just thought it'd be a bit funny, really. And then me and Leanne got quite close towards the end. So I knew she'd take it in good spirits afterwards.
Yeah.
So I knew it wouldn't be anything too personal. So I just thought, yeah, it'd be funny. But when she said, I'm a faithful, and I just kept a straight face, she was like, oh no, don't let me down. Why are you looking me in the eye?
I bet it's quite surreal watching it back because the show was filmed some months ago.
Yeah.
Does it really bring it back to life, seeing it out there?
Because it was filmed so long ago, I almost like put it to the back of my mind, like I forgot it even happened. And then it got to like December time, and then obviously the emails start firing through. You're like, oh yeah, I actually am going on this big TV show next month. I've never been on TV before. I've never seen myself on the big screen. Watching it, you're like, all the feelings of like each day, each mission, each round table, it's so vivid in my memory. I remember exactly how I was feeling, exactly how it all planned out. It's weird. Yeah, it's a weird feeling to kind of put yourself back. It's like almost like you're reliving it again.
At the start, you hid your disability.
Yeah.
What was it that made you change your mind to vocalise that towards the end?
I always wanted to talk about my disability, but I wanted to do it in an authentic way. I didn't want people to meet me and I go, oh, I'm Jake, I'm disabled. I wanted them to get to know me for me, get to know my personality and make a judgment whether they liked me or not, just for Jake, not Jake who's disabled. Because I always feel like there's a stigma attached to disabilities that, rightly or wrongly, people sort of feel sorry for someone that's disabled. I didn't want that stigma attached to me. So I thought, let them get to know me for me in my own time, if it comes up in a natural way, great. And it did. It just naturally came up in the mission. I was struggling and I was obviously just talking to Alexander and I thought this is the perfect time. It's also about normalizing it. It shouldn't be like made a big deal. I've got brown hair, you've got blonde hair. It's just a thing. It's something I'm born with. It's something I'm dealing with, but it doesn't define me as a person. So I didn't want to kind of override me and my experience, if that makes sense.
Have you always had that outlook day to day in life? Do you always keep it back?
Yeah, I think it is a hidden one. I would say I have like a mild form of it. It's not so obvious to people on first impressions.
No, I would have no idea.
Yeah. So I almost feel like I don't want to make a big deal out of it. But then at the same time, I want to advocate the fact that if you are struggling, or I think over the years, I probably have suffered in silence and I've probably struggled with certain tasks or in day-to-day life, and I've probably not mentioned it, my whole childhood growing up, I wanted to be normal. I just wanted to be like anyone else.
But what is normal?
Yeah, exactly. Over the years, I've learned that I am normal.
And exactly.
It's getting that fine line between realising that I am disabled, but my disability makes me who I am. That is normality. Do you know what I mean? So it took a few years to kind of get my head around it. But I think probably around the age of 18 was the real turning point. Why am I ashamed of it? I really need to start embracing it and celebrate it. And actually, my disability has brought so much joy and so many opportunities in my life. So why am I trying to hide? I used to hide it. I used to put it in my pocket. Someone would say, are you limping? Are you sore? And I'd be like, oh yeah, I fell over. Even though I didn't fall over. Yeah.
Oh, that's really
so at school, like I'd sometimes limp. It was just tired or whatever. The more tired I am, the more my leg kind of like trails behind. And someone would say, oh, you hurt yourself. And I'd go, yeah, I fell over. But I hadn't. I just didn't want to explain. I'm disabled.
For those people that don't know, what is cerebral palsy and how does it affect you personally?
Yeah, I'm affected. I'm a right side hemiplegia and it affects my right arm and right leg. It affects my grip, it affects my flexibility. My mobility basically is the main area that's affected. It's just different forms of it. That's the other thing. Meeting other people with cerebral palsy, everyone's different. They're affected more in more ways. Sometimes the both legs affected. It can also affect your brain as well. Like, fortunately, my brain hasn't been affected, but there are people that it can affect all the parts of the body.
What was it at the age of 18 that allowed you to embrace your disability? Because I would imagine, and even now, so many people struggle to embrace that because there is this pressure of societal perfectionism.
Yeah. When I was 18, I was very fortunate to meet the England cerebral palsy football team and get involved.
You like your footy, eh?
I like my football.
I can see the smile.
Yeah. It's where I feel the most comfortable. I'm very passionate. It's almost like I was born to be a football fan, to be a football player. It's like, I couldn't imagine life without it. Growing up playing football, really enjoyed it, but sometimes it was hard because I was playing with people that were like able-bodied, so it was hard to compete with them, if that makes sense. So at 18, I got the opportunity to meet the England cerebral palsy football team and play with them. And that's the first time I've been able to meet someone or a team of people that have the same disability as me, so I could relate to someone. And growing up, from a small town, couldn't relate to anyone. That made it harder. So as soon as I could speak to someone and realise, oh, actually, they've really struggled. They've had obstacles. And look how confident they are. And that gave me confidence. And it was a massive like switch in how my brain worked. I actually thought, what am I doing? This is such an amazing thing. Like, I'm playing for England. I've got my disability to thank for that. That was the big changing point in my life, speaking and hearing their stories and being like, actually, they've gone through exactly the same as me. They're so much more confident than me. They're really embracing it. Why am I not doing the same?
That is so powerful.
Yeah, 100%.
I think you vocalising that on the Traitors as well, and now post-show, you've got this huge platform to continue to inspire others with a disability to embrace it.
Yeah, because I remember being that six-year-old boy. I remember being that kid, not sure about what the future holds and knowing that I was ashamed of it. Looking back now, I don't want kids now looking at themselves in the mirror or looking at the future and thinking, I don't know what I'm going to do, or I can't do this, I can't do that. So that's how I thought, I've got a platform here. Probably should use it in a positive way and kind of spread that positive awareness that, look, it doesn't define you. It opens doors, it doesn't close doors. Don't be ashamed of it. Really embrace it and celebrate it because it makes you you. Like my wife always says, you would not be Jake without a disability. I feel like part of my kind-hearted nature comes from, I know the struggles in life, so I always look at someone else and think before. You know, when you make an impression on someone, I always think, what have they gone through in life? I almost put myself in their shoes before I make a judgment, because I know in life people have struggles, and sometimes it might be visible, and sometimes it might not be visible. It could be hidden. So it's like making sure you don't judge people too quickly. And I think that makes me more of a kind-hearted person, in a way.
What's been your biggest obstacle?
Growing up, it was acceptance. I just wish I'd never had it. I used to think, I don't want to be disabled. I want to be able to just be normal, like everyone else. And accepting the fact that that was never going to happen. That was probably the hardest part growing up. Just realising that I need to embrace who I am as a person. That was my biggest struggle. And it took a while. But like the past 10 years or so, I've just been such a different outlook on life and so positive. I'm just so thankful that I've been able to have that mind shift of how I think, because I think that's such a powerful thing. To be happy in your own skin, I wish everyone on this earth that they could be happy in their own skin, because it's such a powerful thing. That brings confidence, and confidence brings happiness. If you're confident in yourself and then you're passionate about what you do, there's not much that can stop you, regardless of your limitations.
What would you say to someone that's struggling with their own acceptance?
From my personal experience, reaching out to people that you can relate to. Because it's all like your mum and dad or your friends saying, oh yeah, you're fine, like you don't have to worry about it, you're going to do this, you're going to do that. But unless you've been through what that person's been through, it is really hard. So I think reaching out to, you know, if it's a local group or anyone that has a similar sort of disability or, you know, obstacle that you have, and having that conversation that you can relate to them, that is so powerful. Because I know from experience, had I not met them Ingram lads when I did, it might have took me another 3 or 4 years to kind of really think about accepting me as a person.
Are we going to see you back on the pitch?
Well, I have been in contact. They've asked me in contact, and they definitely have said that they want me to come back down, and I am more than happy to oblige. So you might be seeing me back in an England kit very, very soon.
That is so, so exciting.
Yeah, cause that's another thing as well. The cerebral palsy sport in itself needs more awareness as well. So if I could also use my platform to help elevate the sport, whether I'm playing or not, would be amazing, because I feel like there's such amazing people that I've met along this journey, and it'd be a shame for the world not to see that.
Is that the mission?
That's the mission.
Post-traitors.
That's one of the missions for straighters. You look at the women's football the last 10 years and they've had a massive push, and rightly so. They get more screen time now. The sport in itself has been really developed and really improved. I look at how the women's game's improved, and I'd love the disability side to do the same. It takes more than just me talking about it, and they need to push from all different angles. But my kind of goal and mission would be that in 10 years' time, we look back in 10 years' time and I can say I've had an impact and I've made a difference on the sport.
That's so exciting, because you really are in the perfect place to create and make that change and influence.
Yeah.
What else is next for Jake post-traitors? That money, is it going to get spent on a holiday? Have you had a little trip yet? I believe you owe the wife a holiday, is that true?
Yeah, definitely.
Has that happened?
It has not happened yet.
Well, Jake, why not?
I've been a bit busy at the moment. I've got a few things to get on with. But she's definitely mentioned it a few times already. When we're going on this holiday, the holiday will be booked. Don't you worry. I'll definitely be taking her somewhere nice.
If I was to give you the keys to freedom to go on the ultimate Michelin-fueled adventure, so we're talking road trip.
Yeah.
You've got time on your hands. Oh. I'm going to grant you time. Where are you going to go? And who are you going to take? Because you can take three people.
Three people. One would have to be my wife.
Okay.
And then I don't know who else I'd take.
Wifey's in the mix.
Yeah.
Do you know what I'm going to take?
I'm taking my golden retriever.
If I had
as much time as I could.
Yeah.
And it's a road trip. I'd love to take my wife and my golden retriever, Freddie. And I'd love to go to America. I'm obsessed with America. And I'd love to just drive around all the states.
Of the states?
That's one of my goals, is to kind of like visit all the states before I die, because I'm just obsessed with America, going down Route 66 and staying in all the different like motels and that. I think that'd be really nice.
I reckon that's got to be done.
Yeah, right? But it's the time. It's having that time. You know, it takes weeks, probably months to go around. A couple of weeks here, a couple of weeks there, doing different. Got to do the west side, do the east side. Yeah, it's definitely doable.
I can imagine your day to day now is looking very, very different to life before.
It feels like I've gone from 1 mile an hour to 100 mile an hour. And going back to my old job like last week and trying to do what I was doing before, it takes a bit of time to adjust to back to like reality. But it also is good to have like that routine, because I feel like amongst the chaos, routine is good in whatever you do. Having a structure is really important. So I'm trying to get the right balance. But yeah, the last few weeks has been mental. I've spent a lot of time on trains, a lot of time in hotels, living out of suitcases. I mean, would I change it? No, I wouldn't change it.
And you're a Cumbria lad.
Yeah.
You've spent the last 4 days in London, so you're not going into the office currently.
Yeah, no. So
how are you staying on top of the workload?
Yeah, it's really hard. So I'll be away for a few days. I've like 1 or 2 days back in work again and try to catch up with everything. It's been really hard. And trying to switch off. I think that's really important. To switch off from, you know, the chaos and the beauty of this experience that I'm on. But also knowing when to switch off and be like, I need a bit of downtime. So I'm trying to balance it out. It's tricky, but I wouldn't change it.
What was your routine like on the Traitors? Because both physically and mentally, it's a challenging environment.
Yeah. So it's long days. You're constantly in a state of overthinking, paranoia. There's a lot going on in your head. And even when filming stops, it doesn't stop, because in your head, you're constantly thinking about the next day. You're thinking, am I going to get murdered? Who are the traitors? Who can I trust? The whole film, I felt like a military operation. I was in on the front line, be killed or get killed, that sort of mentality. So
did that window of time feel like survival, almost?
Survival of the fittest. Anyone but me, that's my mentality going into it. Make friends, but also make sure that it's someone else before me. Do what you got to do to survive. If that means that someone else has to go, they've got to go. It's really
hard. It is savage, isn't it?
It's savage. And the longer you're in there, the more friendship you build, it comes harder, because it's not as easy to be I don't mind if they go home tomorrow, because you really like them, you're really good friends with them. So it's hard to kind of switch your emotions off. I always think it's a very emotional game. You see all the people crying around the round table, and I can understand why people do cry, because it is so intense and you do build such good friendships in short space of time. I've seen other reality shows and they say things like one day in there is 3 weeks on the outside. That is really true, because you're spending 16 hours with someone, and even though you might not be speaking to them all day, it's that bond you have with people, and they're going through the same experience as you. It does feel like a family. So then when one family member leaves, it does kind of break your heart in a way. It's really strange. It is a strange feeling.
Did that intensity in that environment allow you to discover anything new about yourself?
Meeting people from all walks of life has kind of helped not judge people by the cover.
Yeah.
Because obviously I do try and see how someone else is. I like to try and see someone for who they are before I make a judgment on them. It kind of hit home even more. For example, Dan has autism. In the first couple of days I spoke to him, I was like, oh, he thinks very different to me. But I didn't realize why. But obviously a few days in, I realized he had autism. It kind of made sense. Oh, that's why he thinks that. That's how his brain works differently because of that. It's quite interesting, because I'm such a small town, I've never really met different walks of life, different backgrounds. It was really nice to have that clarity of everyone's kind of really nice and lovely, but in their own different way.
Yeah. I suppose being on a TV show instantly levels everyone.
Yeah.
You're all the same. There's no hierarchy.
Yeah.
However, you might have created your own hierarchy as a king of the faithfuls.
Yeah. That was what's really special, because everyone's going through the same experience. You feel connected as a family. And realising that we're all in this together, whether you're Linda and you're 70 or you're Freddie and you're 21, it humbles everyone to be we're all the same. It doesn't matter what job you've got. Some people might have really good jobs. Some people might be unemployed. It doesn't matter. We're all the same, and we're all kind of got the same goal and want to enjoy the experience. And that kind of adds to the speciality of the game Traitors.
We are on the Monday Mile podcast.
Yeah.
So we do like to ask all of our guests what their relationship is like with Monday. Do you like Monday? And has it changed?
Normally I would say I'm not a Monday lover, because it's the first day of the week, you're back to work, it's a big slog. I feel like Monday and Tuesday, to be honest with you, aren't the best days of the week. But when you're doing amazing things like I have been doing the last few weeks, even being here, I can get used to Monday.
Yeah.
When Monday is like today, you can't complain.
When it comes to Monday in life before the Traitors,
yeah,
so maybe a bit of a sticky day and the Tuesday, what tools would you use to get through that Monday?
I always try and look ahead. So I'd plan the next big thing I'm doing, what have I got to look forward to? And that kind of pushes me on to be get Monday out of the way. I've got this big event at the weekend, or I'm going on holiday, or I'm going for a nice meal with the wife. Try and have something in your head that you're looking forward to.
So little wins.
Little wins, yeah. Even if it's just I get to go home tonight and cuddle my dog. Something nice to look forward to. If you've not got plans, I think plans is really important. If you've got nothing planned, then what are you doing when you're there, sort of thing? You're just kind of waking up, working, go to sleep, repeat. If you've got nothing to kind of look forward to, then it kind of be a bit of soul destroying, really.
It's a funny balance, that, because sometimes it's nice to have no plans, and the best plan is no plan, but plans give us purpose.
Yeah, right? That is life. I get what you're saying in terms of sometimes it's nice to just do nothing. Doing nothing can be such a wonderful thing, but also having that purpose to be like, what am I getting up for in the morning? Even if you're not doing anything, what drives you? Is it your wife? Is it your family? Is it your kids? Having that drive and motivation kind of keeps you inspired to do the best you can from day to day.
And lastly, Jake, do you have a life motto or quote that you can share with our listeners to help inspire them?
So I always say, you've got to back yourself, love yourself. You spend the most amount of time with yourself, in your own mind, in your own brain. So if you don't love yourself, then it's gonna make it more difficult for you. So if you love yourself, back yourself, and really believe in yourself, it's gonna really inspire you to have a better life. That's always my motto.
Do you love yourself?
I love myself.
Do you back yourself?
I back myself.
I'm gonna back myself. Monday Mar listeners, thank you so much for joining us. Jake, I absolutely loved walking and talking with you. Thank you so much for joining us, and wishing you all the very best of luck on your new venture. I can imagine the first day back in the office, people were excited to see you.
Very excited, yeah. Very supportive, and just kind of kept saying, oh, it's a local celebrity, and I'm like,
the local lad from Cumbria. Monday Mar listeners, you know what to do. Make sure you are subscribed. The audio drops at 12 a.m. every single Monday morning for the early risers. Make sure you plug in, tune in, and walk with us. It's a walk and talk pod. Monday Mar listeners, it's a wrap.